Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for the Chicago White Sox blog that BP Baseball Prospectus runs, BP Southside. I don't know why like a long list of that gets jumbled in my head, but it's playoff time, so you know what that means. White Sox talk. I'm joining you on a Saturday night before the Cubs play the only baseball game of the day. Which is a perfect opportunity to remind you that this podcast is available on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio by searching The Catbird Speaks. Using my laptop mic in Chicago, Illinois, is me, James Fegan, the editor of the site. We are joined today by regular senior writer, radio personality, Nick Schaefer in Manhattan.
Hey, hey. Yep, from my new apartment that's about a quarter mile away from my old one.
And longtime caller, first time podcast guest, Frank Burke.
Ferky?
Oh my God, I've been doing that for years. Or months.
Really? Months. Yeah, okay. Everyone does.
I even clued you into the correct pronunciation before we started recording.
We also met.
And we had this conversation in the Slack because Colin was also very surprised to find out that it was Ferky.
It's just, you know. Have you guys considered doing the other way? It just pops a lot more.
Ferky's a lot less threatening, I guess.
In Brooklyn.
You're not like one of those prep school fakers like Nick in Manhattan.
I live in the prep school faker part of Brooklyn, so.
I forgot that it expanded.
No, I'm in old money. I live in like old money Brooklyn to the extent I can say that unironically. And I'm literally around the corner from the prep school in Udonham went to. So,
my New York knowledge is getting exposed in a way I did not anticipate. So, it's an active time in White Sox land in the sense that I think they've had a press event in the last 2 weeks, which is pretty notable for them.
Yep.
At which point they announced that they are hiring Rick Renteria, which... And not just kind of promoting him in season like I guess we all originally anticipated when he was brought on.
Well, to promote him mid season, there would have had to be some sort of catastrophic collapse, and you know that never really came up this year. So
not an issue.
Yeah,
or evidence that the manager was contributing to poor performance.
Right, or having trouble, you know, presiding over, you know, and quelching any incipient uprisings in the clubhouse.
Maintaining respect of his good players.
Yeah, none of that happened. So when were you going to do it?
I mean, he wasn't called out by like the franchise player or something extreme.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Do we have to dispute as to who the franchise player is?
Sure. Who do you think it is?
Well, so I think when you said called out, I was thinking of what Abreu said, and I would say Abreu is not the franchise player.
Oh, I was thinking of when Sale said Robin has to like go to bat for us.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess it's probably not good that the number one and number two franchise players both.
Oh, yeah.
Quintana is quiet as a field mouse.
I mean, he's probably on cloud nine that he got to, what, like 12 wins or whatever?
He was. They, like, celebrated when he got 10.
That was adorable and depressing at the same time. Like, I was genuinely happy for Quintana that he finally got some wins, but...
It's the same way that I was happy for him very much when he made the All-Star game because he was clearly seemed to be like the highlight of his career. But the fact that that's sort of tinged with the idea that maybe he knows he's never going to be able to contribute more meaningfully because the team's never going to make the playoffs.
I don't know why I don't have a whole lot of I mean, I guess I've got some arguments for it. I feel like Quintana's going to age well. I just get that feeling from him, but so maybe once he is like 31 or 32 and signs with a good team, he'll make the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I guess 5 years in a row of being better than people thought he was going to be that year. Maybe he'll just keep doing it.
I mean, he's not a raw stuff guy. So I guess there's some idea that he'd be able to continue to command well as the stuff declines. But then the flip side of that is maybe he's living on the margins on being able to be a top guy with the level of stuff he has. And once it deteriorates, things might fall apart for him. So it's kind of a guessing game.
But, I mean, like, he holds his velocity so well that I wonder if, like, you know, I wonder if you put him if he declined, if you put him in short relief, if he couldn't, like, grab some velocity back in a meaningful way?
Perhaps, and maybe he just, you know, in his 30s, he's a decent three. Which is fine.
Yeah, and if he's with some run support somewhere. But
some Archer.
Oh, God. They're probably the same dude to hang out with, right?
Yeah.
That's like
identical life experiences.
I mean, Quintana could probably help the Bears in the same way that Samardzija could, so.
but they had that press conference. It was obviously the precursor was that leak to the USA Today. People have speculated it was either Reinsdorf or Kenny Williams that, like, Robin could have the job back if he wanted it. And then we found out that Robin had already told them he didn't want to come back, like, in August or something like that. But they still went through with the charade of saying they would decide after the season. Like, Ventura did that, too. And
well, the charade seemed to be leading up to Robin to be able to have, like, this final, like, little statement presser post-game. All right, I'm all done. This is my decision. They need a new voice. And kind of gracefully bow out. Which I guess is nice enough. Ideally, you don't want to slam or repudiate the work of a guy on his way out, especially someone who was very loyal to the org, who, like, kind of did this after being requested to. You don't want to be like, well, now we've got rid of that fucking moron and we can win some games. Like, that's not really the way you'd like to treat that guy. Well, but usually the need to be competitive kind of overwhelms your desire for politeness or have a soft, graceful exit for everybody involved.
Or they could have had a, like, reasonably soft, graceful exit 2 years ago. Like,
right.
Managers get fired all the time. As long as they're not firing him in June, it seems like it's pretty graceful regardless.
It could have been graceful without the leak, though. It could have just been because his contract was up.
Yeah, the leak really served no purpose other than just, I don't know.
It could just as easily have been, they could have done exactly what they did without the leak, which was just, you know, we'll talk about it in the off season. We'll talk about it in the off season. They could have just, you know, said, hey, we're not extending him or offering him a new contract, right? Like, at the end of the year, they could have done that without the leak. And I don't think that makes Ventura look bad or anything. Instead, they basically, like, went, it was like this weird Kabuki theater thing where they make him fire himself.
I feel like leaking at the clearest outcome is just trolling pessimistic White Sox fans. So
right,
that's about the only thing I can see they got out of it.
This was like, I thought this was a really good microcosm of the, like, the White Sox secrecy, because they pride themselves on never leaking anything, and nobody knows what they're going to do until they do it. But, like, they've been so bad for so long that it's just it becomes kind of funny. It's like, oh, we're hiding our top secret plans, and their top secret plans are asinine. So it's like, okay, guys, like, have fun being airtight.
I mean, a lot of people called it correctly, as in, this is giving him an opportunity to step out on his own to try to give him some kind of saving face. And my basic position at the time was the White Sox haven't done anything to really merit that level of credit being afforded to him, that we assume this is, like, some sort of grand gesture and not a legitimate desire to bring him back.
They're not fooling anybody, though. Like, at the end of last year, they fired his bench coach because they said the in-game decision-making is really bad.
Right.
Like, they already called out Ventura for basically being dumb. And then, you know, and the whole league is watching him, like, be a train wreck. So, like, who are they fooling? Who is this for?
Yeah, which is where I don't see how the leak helps him at all. Like, if he just steps aside on his own, then that's nice enough. The leak just sets aside a notion or confirms a notion everyone has about the White Sox that they really don't have an accurate assessment of this guy and how successful he's been.
Are there any other teams? I can't think of any, but teams that have claimed to do the same thing where it's, we're going to let the manager decide if he wants to come back at the end of his contract when it's not a guy who's going to retire. Like, I can't think of anybody else who's pulled this, like, oh, it's up to him, which makes it even stranger as a tactic to save face.
I mean, he might have.
Nobody else has done it.
What'd you say?
He might effectively retire in the sense that he might not get another manager gig, but retiring.
Yeah, but
at age 49
if he wants to, I mean, if he wants to, he can go be a special assistant somewhere, right?
Yeah, probably here.
I'm sure. Like he probably also has ties with the Mets and Yankees, but I don't know why he would need to do that. I mean, it's not like he's. I mean, maybe he needs the money. I don't know.
I mean, wasn't he coaching like his daughter's team or like softball team in high
school? Yeah, I think he was a volunteer high school coach when they signed him.
I don't see why he wouldn't.
I'm assuming means that he was not lacking for money.
I don't believe so.
But or he could go into broadcasting, like
yeah, he was doing that too.
That's my assumption is that if you are remotely popular and were played for more than a few years and were good, you can always find another gig in the game. That's
what's such a one of the biggest downsides of this whole Robin Ventura manager experience is like it worked out about as well as you could have expected given the circumstances, which is to say not good. And he was one of my absolute favorite players growing up. He seems like a really like cool, funny, like, you know, modest guy who I shouldn't have any, but now all my memories of him are like tainted by this whole like, idiotic experiment that went on way too long.
He really comes off as all those things. Like you listen to him, like talk and do interviews with him. You like him.
Colin said he was delightful too when he spoke to him.
So, like, I get it. I get why he seems the part.
Well, he has the leadership material of a 4-star general, right? So, you'd expect that to show up.
4-star general is, like, famously dry wit and, like, reserved.
Maybe that was Kenny Williams' like, really oblique way of slamming 4-star generals. Maybe he had, like, a bad experience.
Like, a 4-star general just watches the suicide wave. It's like, you know, win some, lose some.
Kenny Williams has 5 years of a manager as an extreme subtweet of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Yeah.
We should all be so lucky as to be able to do my
friend, I hope I get paid, you know, what, 8 figures cumulatively as a subtweet to someone else.
Yeah, I'm on board. Even if people question my competence, that's, you know, that already happens. So, like to make a little extra money out of it. Is at that same press conference, Han said that the team underperformed this year.
Yes.
Did that trouble you guys? It troubled me.
I get why it troubled you, but I don't know. I can't. Obviously, the goal was for them to make the postseason, and they didn't do it. I don't think you can say like. I guess I didn't expect anything else. Like. He's not going to say, like, well, I kind of delivered an 80-win roster, so whatevs.
Well, I get that there's a difference between what Han – that there can be a difference between what Han says to the media and what he really thinks. And I assume that, you know, it comes up quite a lot. But I don't know. How much of this year and, like, the last few years are explained by this front office genuinely thinking that, I don't know, like, Abascale is – like really good or that like framing doesn't matter at all or things of that nature. Like, yeah. Do you think that there's anything there?
A safer statement would have probably been didn't meet our expectations because underperformed
no.
Kind of like,
I don't think he's cares enough, nor does he necessarily need to, that he's, you know, like parsing his statements. So finally, I think when he says underperformed, he just meant we thought we had a playoff team. We didn't make the playoffs.
It's a problem that they thought this was a playoff team.
Well, sure. But I don't think he's here to hold
it. I mean, they weren't alone in that
idea.
To be fair.
Well,
it doesn't make it not a problem, but...
It's just funny that, like, I feel like people are drawing all the wrong lessons from this team, where it's like they were an 82 or 83 win team, probably, and yeah, I guess they, like, underperformed, but because they weren't in a position to... try to maintain, like, to play for wins and losses to any meaningful degree for the second half of the season. But, like, you know, people have taken away from this season is that the core is bad and that, I don't know, that maybe that this team, like, should have won but didn't. And like, what's weird is this team basically just, like, did what you'd expect for the most part. Like, there weren't any significant deviations from expected performance in my mind.
I think the only way you can see that there's deviations is that all of the guys who had flop potential flopped, except for Gonzalez, really.
Yeah, and I think Gonzalez goes a long way to offset any mild disappointment you might have from other spots on the roster. Right. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, like, you know, maybe Frazier was 5 to 10% less on offense than you'd hoped. But at the same time, like, you got 100 and what, like, 15, 120 really good innings from a waiver pickup.
Shields was kind of a fucking disaster. I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't realize that he had thrown like 110 innings until I, with the White Sox.
Really kept flinging him out there.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty dumb.
Like, Shields. Go ahead.
I'd like someone to do the analysis on what it would be like if Avi got to hit off Shields for a whole season.
19 bucks.
I mean, yeah, I assume he'd, like, what was the average? So if Avi's like 9% below average this year on offense, give or take, what did the average hitter hit off of Shields?
I mean, I'd be specifically interested in what Avisail did as far as power against, Avisail, like, the most home run ridden pitcher in the sport.
He also struggles to square up velocity, and Shields doesn't have any, so.
I think Shields could sneak that 90-mile-an-hour fastball by him.
Maybe throw it up and in. Although, you could just maybe just throw his curveballs in the dirt until he gets himself out. This is depressing. I was curious if you guys actually, I guess maybe taking anything Hans said at a press conference is just, like, not worth the effort. But I was interested. I that's one of the most interesting things to me about this season is that, like, how predictable, like, all these performances were. Like, most these guys, like, Eaton had, like Xeroxed his season on offense from last year and was, like, a plus right fielder. Maybe the degree to which he was a plus right fielder was surprising, but I don't think it's, like, weird to move a center fielder to right and have him look. And I guess, like, Tim Anderson was real good, so, and everybody else was kind of, like, Brett Laurie was okay, and then he got hurt. That's pretty much what you'd expect. Melky had, like, a classic Melky season. I don't know. Just seemed like about what you'd expect from this roster.
I mean, Deonner was terrible and played, like, way too much because Avila kept getting hurt.
Yeah, I think that was unexpected. At least I didn't expect the catching platoon is going to epically crash and burn. Maybe I should have.
The defense from Deonner was, like, even worse than could have been feared.
Avila's season was, like, exactly what you'd expect from him, though, right? Like,
right.
I mean, you can't come in and say we didn't think Avila would get hurt.
I mean, you obviously hoped, and that would be the difference between, like, their expectations and reasonable projections. Like, you hope, like, oh, Herm magically makes Avila not hurty more.
And Austin Jackson.
Yeah, Austin Jackson blowing out his knee is pretty awful.
He had been pretty...
resulted in.
Austin Jackson, I guess, had been pretty durable before this, right?
Yeah, nothing like missing 4 months due to a meniscus tear. Bad, for sure.
Like, he played 136 games in 2015, and that was probably... He would have played more if he didn't, you know, suck at hitting.
Yeah, like, he was at... He spent the second half on the Cubs. He didn't exactly, like, give him waves of playing time.
Who else did they have who was better? I can't imagine.
No one playing tonight, tell you that much.
Oh, Austin Jackson's middle name is Jeriel.
That changes.
It's kind of neat. Yeah.
He could have gone by AJ.
Could have.
So I think there's, like, some argument to be made that we are irredeemable malcontents. Because... the White Sox, from a very zoomed-out perspective, replaced Robin Ventura with Rick Renteria, which, you know, if you just told me that, like, a year ago, like, that's good. Rick Renteria is, like, a qualified, you know, experienced candidate with actual managerial experience that would be desired by other competent organizations, and now is replacing a manager who struggled. So... If we didn't know anything about the weird kind of strange process for which they, like, wound up with Renteria, it would seem like progress.
Is the do you feel better or worse about adding Rick Renteria, given that he was part of this season? You know, like, if he hadn't been the White Sox bench coach this year and they just, like, hired him, as opposed to him.
Yeah, I feel better, because you'd feel all about, like, oh, this is a new voice, and this will they can do a kind of a sea change about whatever their approach is, whereas you either have the idea that Renteria is not the lifesaver that you may be thinking he might be, or it might just be harder for him to kind of overhaul stuff about the clubhouse and the way they go about things, given the fact that he was a part of the old regime.
Well, it's interesting too, because it could just be that, you know, he's put on the spot and he has to give an answer, but Renteria said something to the effect of, like, I'm hoping to bring more energy, fired up. And, like, you know, they added Laurie and Frazier, and that was, like, a big angle of that. They kept hyping up the, like, oh, we need, like, more leaders in the clubhouse and more people, like, fired up, and we brought in Jimmy Rollins and all that stuff. And it's like, do they really – I mean, maybe it's just a platitude, because, like, at a certain point, you can't be like, look, these guys just can't hit. Like, we're going to try to, like, we'll do the best we can. Or do you think it's, like, genuinely they think, like, that's the problem?
Well, the weird thing is that, at least early on, I don't know how it was in the slide, but something that the Beats talked about was that, despite the whole Drake LaRoche thing, this was a great clubhouse. And, like, guys love each other. They're really loud and energetic. So, like, it wasn't, like, something eating away at the core from throughout the season. It was an antipathy or an apathy towards the sport. I don't know.
Did any reactions ever come out, like, sort of anonymous player reactions to the sale jersey thing?
I don't
remember reading any.
Neither do I.
I think it'd be hard for them to, like, call out Sale. Like, who in that clubhouse is going to call out Sale? Like, Eaton, maybe?
No, I mostly just mean that I'd have thought that at least one of the Beats, or even someone talking to players on another team, would have been would have taken an off-record quote about, like, you know, how ridiculous a red ass Sale is, or like, you'd figure you could find somebody in the league off the record to say that's ridiculous.
Our team actually does not approve of jersey vandalism.
Yeah.
Or, like, think about what they could get various people in, like senior NFL managers to say about Kaepernick. And it seems a little weird that you couldn't get too many external quotes about Sale. But maybe it's
about destroying jerseys because you're mad.
I guess, like, I don't know. There's, like, weird inconsistencies about what athletes or baseball players get upset about versus, like, you know, what I think they should get upset about versus what they do get upset about. But I hear you. Like, surely somebody had an opinion on it. Or maybe, you know, maybe the Beats just didn't, like, feel a need to solicit opinions on it. Because it's, like, everybody was just sort of universally like, wow, this is really strange.
Like, I don't think anyone in the clubhouse would want to go on record, either with their name or anonymously, just, like, trashing Sale. But I'm sure they're, like, off the record stories of, like, wow, what a fuck up. But
I wish that people like Molly Knight or like Travis Sochick or whatever would write books about teams that actually weren't very good or very, like, someone just picked a random team, like Halverson Breaks the Game style, and there had been an embedded reporter, and this is all going to come out with names in a book.
Maybe there have been, but the book just, like, doesn't get us publisher afterwards. Like, we're shelving the manuscript on the 2015 White Sox.
I mean, I'd be interested, but
the only rule is the season has to end on time.
I mean, I guess it's hard too.
The only rule is you have to wear your jersey. Oh,
the hard part is, like, you have, you know, obviously teams win, it, like, it covers over a lot of, like, friction in the clubhouse, and if teams lose, like, generates friction where there might not be otherwise. So it's very, like, chicken of the egg type thing for some of these issues. Like, you know, maybe if the White Sox were still in first place, Sale just wears the damn jersey and, like, doesn't have a problem with it, you know?
I'm pretty sure if he's not reading, like, trade rumors all week, he wears the jersey.
He's not hiding the ball at all about how, you know, he's pretty explicit about how he's like, these rosters you've been building around me are just not good enough, and it's killing me.
Yeah, at the same time, he doesn't trash Han very much, or he's backed him in the past. I think he's just in general opposed the idea of selling. Like, it's never been about calling out, like, teammates or saying, like, this team isn't good enough. It's all about, we want to be sure that we're trying to win.
But could that be a comment on the fact that they haven't even been in, like, a position to buy at the deadline? Like, they haven't been in a position to, like, try to win?
I would say it's probably not that nuanced. It's probably just more like, why aren't you buying at the deadline?
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, they haven't been in a position, so they haven't, therefore... You know,
but I don't think he's assessing it and saying, like, we're not in a position. I think he's just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I also wonder how much he or other players on other teams are looking at this and being like, this is an owner who has, you know, who's rich as Croesus, who's cheaping out on and, like, not getting me Dexter Fowler. Like, I wonder if that's his approach.
I wonder how much players pay attention to things like that.
But, like, if you're like, on a team and your ad, like, I don't think your attitude or your approach can really allow for your assessment to be like, well, we're 500-ish, and generally teams with, like, this far back, and given the amount of teams we have to overcome, even though we're only 5 games back, it's really just improbable. So it's probably prudent for us to not trade at the deadline and just, you know, play on the string for 2.5 months. Like, I don't think they kind of make those kind of, like, really
cynical
self-assessments.
No, I'm talking from, like, before the year... Like, you know, Sale gets the call about Frazier, about Laurie, and he's excited. And then the offseason just keeps going, and all the outfielders get signed. And he's thinking, like, goddamn, Austin Jackson? Really?
Maybe they're like, I played Austin Jackson. He's good.
Like, not knowing professional baseball players, I have really no insight into how they think about these things.
I can see this cutting both ways, right? Where it's like, okay, you know, they're not doing, like, the math on it. They're just thinking, yeah, that guy's, like, a good pro. He's good to have around. Like, he'll help us with Austin Jackson. Or if it's like, you know, we pay this much attention to this. This is their, like, livelihood. Like, why wouldn't you pay a lot of it? Like, if I were a pitcher, I'd be, like, fascinated to know who's, like, what defense is going to be behind me and what run support I get. And, you know, that's me. Maybe that's not, like, the competitor's mindset. But I don't know. Wouldn't you guys be thinking about that?
I would. It seems like major leaguers are more prone to believing guys who've done it before can do it again.
And just attributing things to, like, effort and, you know,
or just, like,
the team,
like,
doing
it
together.
Healthy, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Because I don't think having this view of everything is constantly in deterioration after a certain age and you should just divest really vibes with them very well.
You don't think they dwell on entropy?
Maybe during the off season.
That would be a really good name for a jazz album.
I bet Canary dwelling did a lot.
I think that's a Bernie Williams album.
Canerico made references
to Gammons
and
Bronson Arroyo.
Yeah, Connor Gillespie's a playoff hero, though.
Yeah, he could do that. He hit some decently big home runs at the White Sox.
I was really happy for him.
Yeah, he was, like, genuinely excited and, like,
I may have been happier than he was.
I was my girlfriend was curious as to why I had that, like, post game interview on, because I never watch post game interviews, and I said that I was just trying to record for posterity the fact that the guy who hit the game-winning home run didn't smile the whole time he was being interviewed about it.
I love that story that I saw on Twitter about, like, you know, the whole Giants clubhouse is going nuts, and then Bumgarner, like, completely laconically goes up to, you know, Connor and just is like, I really appreciate that. And, like, that's it. Like, that's that whole moment just between the two of them. It's, like, absurd flat affect, like... stoicism between both of them. It's like, you guys both just, like, had tremendous moments that, like, are, like, career defining. Maybe not for Bumgarner, because he just, like, does this constantly, but, like, and neither of them is amped up at all.
Well, Bumgarner just really appreciates that he didn't spend too much time looking at it. he's happy that Connor did it the right way.
Don't look at me while I scream at you. That's his kink.
While everyone else celebrated, Bumgarner timed him around the bases.
Bumgarner pondered letting a runner get to third so that he could throw at his third baseman.
Yeah. I don't know. Are you guys... I feel like everybody's posting some sort of, like, playoff rooting interests. Do you guys have any feelings about that?
I mean, it's difficult for me to do something like that because everything's kind of driven by hate and who I hate less.
I've always admired you. You've been always very, like, clear-minded about non-White Sox playoff teams where you're just, like, you're somehow rooting for them all to lose. They can have no one. No one in champion.
Like,
maybe like
I think I've said in the past, like the only bad thing about the playoffs is at the end someone actually does win.
Yeah, I think
that's an extraordinarily White Sox fan sentiment.
He's been positioned like in 1994.
Like, there are 10 teams. So there are 10 like fan bases if you watch get like pumped up, pull themselves like all season. You get to watch 9 of them just get like taken down to their lowest moment on like national TV, just stripped of like all their happiness.
That's the thought, is that all the teams who, like, don't, or, like, their fan Twitter, like, doesn't permeate into broader baseball Twitter, like, the D-backs and the Rockies and the Marlins, like, that's, like, a reason to root for them, is that I won't, you know, I don't follow any Marlins fans, so I won't have to be irritated by Marlins fans. Jeffrey goddamn Loria.
Like, the only Diamondbacks person I know on Twitter is, like, that guy who writes for the SB Nation, like Diamondback site, and he's like seems like a pretty good dude. So it's like, yeah, that's as far as I know, that's the entirety of Diamondback Twitter.
Yeah, seems pretty I positive. Must just know the guys who were on Sweet Spot with us a couple of years ago. They seem fine, and also mostly horrified these days.
Yeah, I guess I root for like the funniest outcome, and I suppose, you know, like there are teams that I dislike more than other, like I'd really be fine with the Red Sox not getting another World Series win. Yeah. I was saying that if the Giants won again, it'd be really funny.
Yeah, it would. And I'm kind of taking solace in that. Like, for me, earlier today, Mauricio was showing me some Photoshop of some guy showing four Cubs players walking across the Wrigley Field like Abbey Road cover.
Oh, God. Beatles,
and calling it Covey Road. I'm like, okay, I guess I'm full on just rooting for chaos for the Giants to win. And then I read a bunch of like Giants articles like bitching about the fact that Javi Baez's home run like landed in the basket and didn't really clear the fence when the basket's been there for decades. And I was like, all right. now I can really see myself going for the Cubs.
I mean, I don't care for the Giants particularly, though they have a couple dudes I like. You know, I like Cueto, but I just can't. The joy I would see out of seeing the Cubs stumble is just not to be understated. So
I really try to keep my head.
Like, I think the biggest thing for it these days is that it would irritate me to no end that they would have gotten good right after the Ricketts bought the team and then, you know, put the Jumbotron up and covered it in ads. There's no baseball God if that, you know, helps undo the curse instead of contributing to it.
Oh, I hadn't even, I mean, yeah, the more I learn about different owners, like the less likable those, a lot of organizations become.
I'm pretty comfortable of writing about the White Sox. I'm pretty comfortable saying there's no baseball God.
How do you explain 2005 then?
A troll on other better organizations.
I'm fine with that. See, that's the thing. Like, if I were a Giants fan, it's just like, if that must be what it's like. Like, I love that they're trolling everybody, that it's like, you know, like, because in the regular season, Bumgarner's, you know, really good, but he's not like, he's pretty indistinguishable from this tier of like very good number one starters, but like most of the time you would consider him a, sort of like a cut below like the best of best guys, right? Like, he hasn't won a Cy Young Award or anything like that.
This year, though, he might win a Cy this year.
Maybe. I thought Scherzer was like...
That'd be sneaking in and all, like, crowded, no, like... But it's like Kershaw was definitely the best pitcher, but missed 2 months, and, like, what do you do? Like, how does Fernandez shake out? And
yeah, I'm not saying he's no.
The NL's bias is very weird.
If he won this year, he'd be calling, like, screaming, like, this is bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, he's like... Yeah, I guess he's just photocopying, like, the same season over and over again, getting, like, more strikeouts. But, like, I don't know, the fact that... I don't know. The whole Giants thing is hilarious to me. So I'm still on board with that. I guess like the Bumgarner thing too. Him stomping the Royals made me very happy.
You just can't put too many eggs in one hate basket. You got to have one in each, and then when it comes through, you enjoy it as much as you can. But I can't stake my whole postseason on like Cubs stumbling because it can't happen. So I got to enjoy the Giants being taken off the perch. And I got to figure out something to hate about the Nationals.
If the Cubs win by like brutally embarrassing the Red Sox, that will be a silver lining. Like if Poppy strikes out with the bases loaded in Game 7 or something. Like,
I don't like Batista. I could find something to enjoy, like him like getting like Toot Bland to end the World Series. That'd be good.
Oh, against the Cubs.
Yeah.
I mean, the Blue Jays, I like the Blue Jays a lot, even though they're super thin-skinned, and Kat is going to be mad that this is on our podcast, that I like the Blue Jays a lot. But, yeah, I guess so. I guess either Cubs or Giants winning is funny for the other team losing. So that's like a win-win in a way.
The Indians are an AL Central rival, and they all got pissed because their, like, longtime beat writer suggested that losing their number 2 and 3 starters was probably pretty bad.
Oh, and they also still wore their like their Chief Wahoo hats.
Yeah.
Yeah, that.
Why are they doing that? I thought their whole weren't they saying that they were going to like be de-emphasizing that gradually
it's
and like wearing
very
their
gradual.
I wearing their they had just intended to do it without saying anything about it because that way they would quietly be less racist, but they wouldn't have to tell people that they were doing it to be less racist. And so the people who are wrong about this wouldn't be angry at them in the same way.
But couldn't they, like, I thought they made some sort of statement like, yeah, we're going to be like wearing the like old fashioned C hats more than the like Wahoo hats moving forward. And it, like nobody, like if you were, you know, like a Cleveland fan, would you have freaked out if you were like, why are they wearing these hats? Instead of, where's Chief Watt? Like, who's that
me,
guy?
No, but well, oh, yes, okay, people
I mean,
there.
I guess since you're not from Chicago, there's not or Illinois, you haven't, I guess, seen all the like save the keep the Chief, or like what they did in like that crazy guy who gives all the money to the North Dakota hockey program. Like, people are really attached to this shit for really epically wrong reasons. So.
I once like watched for my job, a 4-hour school board meeting because Goshen High School in Goshen, Indiana wanted to change from Redskins to, Red Hawks.
Shouldn't they just, isn't Goshen's the town that's like all Mennonite, right?
Mostly Mennonite. Yeah. Found
that
Mennonite.
Seems like extra weird that they, that's a big deal there, but
it was great because, someone would come up and say, like, you know, I'm from this tribe, or my grandfather's from this tribe, or I'm literally just drove here from the reservation. And say, like, this is deeply offensive. And then someone else would come up behind, like, this ain't offending nobody. This is some PC. That guy just, like, walked up from the mic like 2 seconds ago. Did you not understand what he was saying?
Oh, that's... And you just had to sit there?
Yeah.
Just diligently taking notes?
I mean,
did you at least have a very snide write-up?
No. Can't do that.
You're too professional for that?
Yes.
Professional is an interesting, you know, euphemism for coward.
Wow. It's got very real.
I wouldn't have said a word. That was the correct move. I'm just saying.
Oh, no, I meant snarking in the article. I didn't mean standing up at the meeting.
I just like...
It was
like
a nice story.
We
don't have to do any actual interviews because everyone just makes an ass out of themselves.
Live. Can I find this article on if I Google it?
It wouldn't be written by me.
I just like accusing people of cowardice. It feels like such an antiquated insult. It's purely why I did it.
People don't get called cowards anymore? I'm pretty sure people get called cowards.
Like, directly? Like, at each other? Do they say, like, you are a coward, sir? Do people...
I feel like that's almost certainly the sort of thing that a baseball player would have said. I guess maybe more vulgar, but...
I think coward is used in, like a third person. Like, he's a coward. I don't think people say, you are a coward anymore. That's what I'm
saying. Bring back yellow.
Yeah, yella.
Unless that's a term that is racist without my ever having thought about it before, which is possible.
Yeah, that's probably it. Did you guys have any, before we start wrapping up, did you guys have any thoughts on, like, totally changing gears on, I had my big wall of text about rebuilding? And
Hans talked about, like, he reiterated the whole thing, the whole thing about you'll know what we do when we get started. But he said we've considered all options, and he's talked about adding to the core. And he also said we've also considered the more extreme option of stripping him down. So I kind of took the way he kind of introduced that and kind of couched it as being like extreme, as I already would have thought it unlikely that they would go full rebuild, and the way they keep like introducing it as like this extreme thing that needs to be considered, but that doesn't sound like how you introduce rebuilding to a fan base. Like, you introduce it as like a sound principle and it's going to be hard, but like, it's going to be worth it. Not like, oh, we could do the crazy thing. You never know.
I hadn't thought of it that way. I guess it's sort of, you've had a couple of factors at work here where you have, the fan base simultaneously and understandably being very frustrated because they sense that the team is like not really pursuing winning aggressively at all. They're not committing in either direction. And then they look over at the Cubs and they say, well, those guys rebuilt and now look at them. There's some Kool-Aid that's been sold to everybody, because I think a story that hasn't been emphasized enough this year is like the Astros didn't spend to supplement their playoff roster from last year. And now you've got a team that went through like years of hell, and they're going to have what, 186 win team that made a wild card game to show for it.
They did at least make the LDS, but yes.
Yeah. But I mean, that's like secondary to like what sort of team they created.
The Astros to be good next year. I would say,
yeah, I would too, but
their core is still extremely young. But yes,
they've got.
I wouldn't say like, oh, this is all they're going to get out of it. I would definitely agree that like they did seem to not try to capitalize it on their momentum in 2016. They just kind of like had a year where, I don't know, you waited for Bregman for some reason. I don't get it. Like,
I mean, they made some pretty disastrous mistakes as well, but that's the thing, is like you need to get almost everything right if you're gonna. I don't know, like. You get a few swings at these top draft picks while you're at the bottom there, and missing on one is pretty costly. Like they had 3 1-1 picks in a row, and they only got one of them who was like worth anything. Obviously, Correa is like pretty great, but
what did they do with the comp pick for Aiken?
They got Bregman,
so that was okay.
I guess.
Well, ruthless.
I mean, TBD. I assume Bregman's going to be good, but.
But people thought Appel was going to be good.
I don't people think thought
Appel destroyed AAA the way Bregman is. I think that's a lot more closer to being a sure thing at this point.
I like, if you ask me, I assume Bregman's going to be a good major leaguer as soon as next year. I just, you know, we're not sure yet, though.
He's pretty much a good major leaguer like his last 2 months.
Well, I mean, Jesus Montero was a good major leaguer for 2 months.
Avisel Garcia.
You're both damaged people.
No argument
there. Dion Viciato.
So I think the White Sox are probably adding, but now they have a barren free agency. And
what are they going to add?
Not too much prospect depth to really deal from, like less than they had last season, where they still like mostly had to swing extreme bargain hunting to... Like their big like push your chips to the middle of the table trade got like a slightly above average third baseman.
There's no way they're gonna the Rangers are gonna extend a call from Desmond, is there?
Yeah, definitely. Why wouldn't they?
Take it.
I mean, I feel like this, especially for this market, why would he not turn it down?
I guess Desmond's turned down a few contracts to his detriment in the recent past.
Like, yeah, up.
I mean, this one, last year his issue was the market was loaded, and this year, right, we're talking about how there's nobody else for the White Sox to sign, which applies to every other team.
And now people are probably convinced he can probably sell the people that he can play center field, the playoffs.
And now the White Sox are going to have to burn, like, what, the 14th overall pick instead of the 26th?
Yeah, to get his 630 second half OPS. Like, if there's, like, some GM of a team that has been in a coma since June, Dion Desmond's going to make a lot of money.
Well, the White Sox have kind of been acting like they've been in a coma since June, so it's possible.
Maybe there's a GM who got suspended since June and hasn't been watching any baseball.
There seems to be some sort of, I don't know if it's sarcastic rumbling or just hope driven or whatever. I've seen Edwin Encarnacion as a name people have discussed. Obviously, he's like one of the higher impact bats that's going to be out there. But
they need an impact bat.
That mostly just seems like a parody of like Adam Dunn again. Like, not that I think he would collapse, but. The idea of like, well, you sign the guy who's always been a good hitter. He's going to keep being a good hitter.
Here's what's frustrating about trying to analyze this, though, is you guys would agree that as outsiders, we have incomplete information on all these players, right? Like in terms of guessing what they're going to do and projecting them forward. Is that a fair premise to start from?
Fine.
Yes.
I do this, I don't know if you guys do this, where certain organizations, I give them the benefit of the doubt that they see something that I don't, as opposed to other organizations where I'm like, what are they doing? Is that something you guys do also?
Sure.
I try to be balanced about it because it, too quickly, it turns into things that are circular. Because you say, well, it's a smart person did it, so it's a good move. And then if it turns out poorly, you say, well, it was a good process and they got unlucky and...
Oh, yeah, that is frustrating because you can make somebody immune to criticism where they shouldn't be. And the White Sox have that, too, where, like, every bad move gets attributed to Kenny Williams and every good one gets attributed to Han, which I think is weird because people act like Han just, like, appeared out of nowhere in 2013, whereas he was actually...
Oh, my God, we were podcasting while the world discovered our Jeff Samardzija tweets.
I saw that earlier.
What just happened?
The, like, long Twitter thread of bad Jeff Samardzija jokes that you guys had last year, I think, has gotten retweeted into my feed.
Oh, my God. I had Twitter closed. What prompted this?
I don't know. I blame Aaron.
Oh, but now, like, people are writing new ones, too. All right, I gotta... Hold on. Okay, so I just want to finish this thought. But there are players like Edwin Encarnacion where... I could talk myself into thinking, okay, you know, he's 34, you know, he could, you know, his peripherals are probably trending in the wrong direction. He might only have a couple of good years left and he's going to get like a 4 or 5 year deal or something like that. And it's going to be risky, right? Like he's, you know, he's at that age where he could break down at any time. But, you know, he generally has had like good strikeout to walk ratios. He has like great power. He seems to have like really good bat to ball skills. He might also like age gracefully. And if a team like if the Cardinals pick up Encarnacion, I'm more inclined to believe that like the positive side is more likely, as opposed to if the White Sox sign him, I'm much more inclined to think he's going to hit like two, you know, become like do like a Frazier year.
Yeah. Well, part of it is just the White Sox are not big outbid the world types. So for them to win kind of means the market might be backing off of that player in general.
Yeah. Right. Winner's curse can either manifest as like spending too much money or getting a total dud. And for the White Sox, it basically always seems to manifest in getting a dud.
But they should do something. Like, I can't discourage the general practice of curing your offense by going and signing the biggest bet on the market as a band-aid. I don't want to discourage that kind of action, because I don't know, trying to do a reclamation project on a Mark Kotze type is not better.
And also, if they're not going to trade people, then there's no harm comes from signing. Whatever amount of money they're going to tie up is not going to be a big deal in a couple of years. And, if it backfires, then they just – I can't see a way in which, signing someone big is going to be worse than going at it without signing someone big.
Eric Johnson got Tommy John surgery this week.
Did. Do you think, how long do you think that problem's been ongoing? Do you think he bounces back in a meaningful way?
Probably not.
I mostly was just struck by the fact that after all the discussion about what if the Padres had been pulling their damaged goods shenanigans with the Shields, that they got the guy who's getting TJ.
Yeah, I wonder how that makes them feel. Johnson was a number four upside probably at his peak. I mean, we probably wanted him to be number three, but I
saw baseball. I think Baseball America and Keith Law had him as a two or three upside.
He was the White Sox number one prospect in 2014.
BP alum Zach Mortimer called him a four, and Zach Mort was pretty good at cutting White Sox prospects down to size before he got snatched up. He was the Courtney Hawkins three guy.
But the thing is, Eric Johnson, there was a visible difference between when he was a well-regarded prospect and then what happened, right? It wasn't man, the stuff that he had doesn't work after all. It was oh, his stuff backed up.
Yeah, he went from 88-mile-an-hour hard sliders to 88-mile-an-hour straight four-seam fastballs.
Yeah, so Eric Johnson, good prospect, was disappeared. It wasn't we all were wrong on what Eric Johnson was.
Right, and he disappeared years ago. So trying to explain it with Tommy John surgery now, was his elbow fucked for three seasons?
Probably not.
And do we think a Tommy John surgery is going to get him to zap back to, 2011, 2012?
Can't really see that happening. I think there is something to be written about, re-examining the Addison Reed trade for the White Sox. That would have been more topical if the Mets had won, but...
Yeah, I was just about to say, I guess we'll be rooting for Addison Reed this playoffs until I remember the whole part where his team lost.
Yeah, the two teams I was actually most most unambiguously rooting for were the Mets and the Orioles. So,
yeah, well done too.
Funny how that happened.
But Addison Reed pitched 77 innings with an ERA under 2 this year. Obviously you can't assume that he would have turned out this well, in a different universe. But if the White Sox had just hung on to him, I don't know. You replace 77 innings of Matt Albers and Chris Beck. What does that do to your wins and losses?
Probably something good. I know Worthen definitely worked with him extensively and, helped with his slider and everything, which was always shaky and inconsistent with the Sox. But this was a super good relief prospect, so it's not crazy to see him doing this at all.
Mm-hmm. He was their number one prospect at 1.2.
Yeah, and while it was because the system sucked, he was a top 100 prospect as a reliever-only guy, so he was legit.
Well, too bad. Too bad he couldn't nail down a World Series or something this year.
Davidson hit that single, so the White Sox got their money worth.
I think
I just feel bad for Matt Davidson.
Yeah, me too. It's got to be so frustrating. I feel bad for Charlie Tilson.
Yeah, I mean, this was probably there's not as much, like, this is probably like his one shot to get significant playing time feel with Tilson, but this was certainly a really good one.
Yeah.
Like, there was no reason to play anybody else for the next 2 months.
Right.
And it would have been nice to, like, actually get to evaluate him when the games didn't matter, as opposed to, like...
Right, what's he going to do next? Like, what? Where is he on the roster next year?
I mean, he should probably be the fourth outfielder
and... Yeah.
But I don't think you go into the... I don't think you think, oh, he's got some chance to be a starting center fielder who doesn't hit very well and not get anybody for that position, because that would be a dumb, bad thing that only a foolish front office would do.
Yeah, I can't think of dumb, bad things the White Sox have done.
No, I can't think of a time where they started a defensive versus center fielder with a question mark bat and just gave him the center field job to start out, and it tanked.
Especially not one with an injury history.
All right, so as long as we got that cleared up.
Cool. Well, I had a good time.
When I could hear you, I also had a good time.
I had a good time.
Great.
Let's do it again.
We could do one of the... Nick and I could do a live podcast.